The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We have a lot to get to yet again today, and we'll talk, as we have been all week, more about the Trump administration and the scandals, in many ways the manufactured scandals, and likening this, as they're doing on the left, to Watergate. And then, of course, there's some influential voices on the right that are pointing out that this is nothing like Watergate. I think Andrew McCarthy had one at the National Review titled The Latest Just Like Watergate Idiocy. Well, I'd like to start, speaking of Watergate, I'd like to take us back to Great Again, my father's booklet, written just last year, and then it's just been newly revised as we've added a chapter or two in that booklet. And so what I've pulled together here comes from chapter 3 of the latest version of the Great Again booklet, The Origins of America's Dangerous Turn to the Left. This is coming from an article that we first printed, I believe, a little over a year ago in the Trumpet magazine. Then it was made into a chapter for the first version of Great Again, and it's in there now as chapter 3. And my father, as the title suggests, he's talking about the influence that communism has had on our Western nations, particularly the United States and Britain. But it says here, Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1956 about communism, quote, perverting our morals, sabotaging our educational system, wrecking our social structure, destroying our spiritual and religious life, weakening our industrial and economic power, demoralizing our armed forces, and finally, after such infiltration, overthrowing our government by force and violence. All this clearly disguised as a harmless political party. So you can ask yourself, I mean, have we been infiltrated with all of these influences? I mean, look at the many problems that America is facing today. That was a warning that Mr. Armstrong sounded back in 1956. My father then writes, communists first corrupt, pollute, and agitate from within, but their final phase is a violent overthrow of the government. Their aim is to destroy the system because they can't build another one until that happens. He says the communist attack from within America is far more significant than you may realize. We're staring it in the face today. And so he quotes from Mr. Armstrong's warning from well over 50 years ago, 60 years ago, in fact. And then he talks about the communist attack and what America is facing today in 2017. And we may look at this and think, well, it hasn't really impacted our society like what's written about there in Great Again. But as he says, it's far more significant than we realize. And the reason why maybe we haven't noticed it is because it's just been creeping along slowly in some ways, I guess fast in other ways, over the course of decades. Well, the booklet then, and just to continue with the narrative of the booklet, it has a section, The Real Watergate Scandal. It's a really amazing look back on this history from the 1970s, an excellent synopsis of that history and of where the real scandal was. It says here in 1974, well, just to paraphrase some of the essentials, the key details. You know, the Nixon administration had broken into the Democratic National Committee headquarters. Then they tried to cover up their actions, and then they were brought down because of it, or Nixon was, and along a lot of his advisors were as well. And it's just seen now today as the story of a corrupt president who was obstructing justice. And so it led to him having to resign from the presidency. Well, my father says here, President Nixon was a staunch opponent of communism. See, few people realize this because they don't dig into the subject very far. President Nixon was a staunch opponent of communism, and the left, it says, hated him for it. At the time of Watergate, Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox News, said, "The American press get the pleasure in successfully crucifying Nixon, but the last laugh could be on them. See how they like it when the commies take over the West." That was the warning Rupert Murdoch gave at the time, way back at the time of Watergate, back in the 1970s. And as my father brings out, I mean, he wasn't the only person who thought that way. Look, you better be careful, you members of the news media. You better be careful. You remove all of the blocks to this spread of communism and see how much then you're going to like it when they take over the West, when that ideology spreads far and wide throughout our society. Well, my father says here, what happened at that time has a lot to do with what we see today. I mean, there are some similarities. In a lot of ways, it is like Watergate, but not the way that the left today thinks. That, well, you had Nixon obstructing justice, and now you have Donald Trump. Clearly, he's obstructing justice. I mean, he got Comey out of the way. And so now Trump, he needs to resign. He needs to be impeached. It says here, this is my father writing, "I remember hearing educator Dr. Herman Hay making this point in 1980, he said," this is all from Great Again, Chapter 3, "he said that President Nixon actually had come to recognize a conspiracy to work communists into the new left in America, and that he broke it up. And for that," Dr. Hay said, "he was driven out of the presidency because a part of his plan involved preventing the far left from capturing the Democratic Party, and hence Watergate." That's all a part of the story that most people don't realize. Watergate was not an attempt to see who was at some party of the Democratic headquarters. It was far more serious. So my father talks about, well, what happens when the far left gets control of the Democratic Party? I mean, would you say that it's gotten control of the Democratic Party? My daughter was just reading through some history from the 1950s, FDR, and then going into Truman's administration. And we were just having a discussion there in the car on the way to dance about just how different the Democratic Party is today as compared to that time period coming out of World War II. Well, there were those who were working to expose the communist influence back in the 1940s and 50s, and working to try to keep it out of our educational institutions, keep it out of the newsrooms, and to keep it out of the Democratic Party. Well, in this section, again, a powerful section, the real Watergate scandal, it's from Chapter 3 of the Great Again booklet. My father then refers to Jeff Shepard's book from 2015, just a couple of years ago. And he published his book. It went by the same title that my father used for that that subheaded section in Great Again. And Shepard served as deputy defense counsel for the Nixon administration. And so I'm sure there are those on the left who would just dismiss this work as, well, it's partisan. He was on the side of Nixon, so he doesn't have anything new to add to this story, to this history. But look at the facts, as we discussed last week. And look at the evidence, as Melanie Phillips urged us to do as an editorial staff at The Trumpet. Shepard says, this is based on an article from the Washington Times, It says, in one of the ultimate, this is Shepard writing, in one of the ultimate ironies of political history, it appears that the smoking gun tape, now this is referring to the audio tape, in which Nixon, my father includes here in brackets, apparently sought to limit the FBI's investigation. So then he was prosecuted later for obstruction of justice. In any event, Shepard says, it appears that the smoking gun tape has been totally misunderstood, that the president need not have resigned, and that he was actually driven from office and his senior aides imprisoned through highly improper actions of judges and Watergate prosecutors. It quotes him further as saying, John Dean, President Nixon's principal accuser, has recently acknowledged, this is from Shepard's investigation, it's from Shepard's research, one of the chief principal accusers has recently acknowledged that the president and his defense team were totally mistaken about the tape and its significance. If we had known the context in which that conversation had taken place, the president would not have had to resign, and in Dean's own words, he could have lived to fight another day. So it's not just in the view of Jeff Shepard. It's also coming from the principal accuser. Documents I've recently uncovered, Shepard says, in the National Archives tell a tale of secret meetings, secret memos, and secret collusion that will shock many Americans and that constitute flagrant violations of our Constitution and its Bill of Rights. That's quoting from Jeff Shepard's work, and that became a book in 2015, The Real Watergate Scandal. My father in Great Again says the people who were supposed to be protecting the Constitution and the Bill of Rights were trampling all over it behind closed doors. And so this is what the real Watergate scandal was all about. Now, my father then goes in this same section of the booklet. He then gets into the lengthy section on Alger Hiss, the Russian spy, and how that Nixon played a part in bringing him down, in bringing him to justice. And in fact, Shepard says Nixon came to national prominence as a result of this investigation into Alger Hiss that resulted in him being convicted of perjury in 1950. Shepard says the liberal Eastern establishment, particularly its many Harvard educated members, never forgave Nixon for his leadership in bringing down one of their own. You see, Alger Hiss, he was educated at Harvard as well. He was a Soviet spy, keep in mind, but they loved him on the left. They loved him on the left. He came right out of America's top university. And the highly educated of that day absolutely raved about him. My father mentions how that so many of these same people, they really don't uphold the Constitution as the supreme law of the land. They in fact despise it. They're lawless. In their hearts, there's lawlessness. There's a hostility to that supreme law. My father says here, the law-breaking in the Watergate scandal was nothing compared to the law-breaking these people did behind the scenes. They violated the Constitution time after time because they have no respect for it. They have such towering respect for their own intellect that they think they know more than the Founding Fathers. He says this has led the U.S. into catastrophic problems. Well, from there, my father then talks about more recent history, the Obama administration, and all of his communist mentors. And it's referred to in President Obama's own memoir, Uncle Frank, and others, too. My father says in Great Again, it's stunning how much and how often the government of this land is exposed for being deceitful. See, we've talked a lot about that this week. The truth being cast to the ground, Isaiah 59. God having a controversy with our people because there's no truth in the land. Hosea 4 and verse 1. My father says here, everything revolves around deceit. Americans have practically come to accept this as a fact of politics today. They just accept it. Who's going to give us the truth? How do we know who's speaking the truth? As I was saying yesterday with these news reports of this DNC staffer that was killed last year, or with these other reports about the leaked information to the Russian authorities, to Russian diplomats. And then most recently, now you've got the New York Times reporting on this memo from James Comey that he wrote a couple months ago, showing how that supposedly Donald Trump actually was trying to impede the progress of the investigation. Everyone has testified, of course, that hasn't happened. But now along comes this memo that was just sitting in a file somewhere for a couple of months. Until now, until the gotcha moment. These things are just happening every single day. Well, it's no wonder so many in America are so cynical. They've practically come to accept that's just politics. But my father says here, this is something that we should be deeply disturbed by. And we should give some thought to the dangerous consequences of this kind of politics. He says, finally, Americans today are not living in the nation of our founding fathers or even of our own fathers. The ideological roots of the Obama administration were more radical than the public was led to believe, and it is certain that the devil used this fact to his advantage. He says, finally, the radical left and its Marxist ideas have gained control of the Democratic Party. Well, President Obama himself talked about the Marxist professors that he hung out with in college. I mean, it's something now that they're proud of. They declare it. Look at the rise of Bernie Sanders, or the success of his campaign, given how far left, how radically left his views are. And yet he was right there for quite a while, neck and neck with Hillary Clinton about a year ago. So you bring it up to what's happening today, going back to this Watergate comparison. Study that third chapter of Great Again, the real Watergate scandal, and then consider what's happening now daily, this attack on the current administration in the White House. It's not even been there yet a full 4 months. But the barrage of attacks, it's been nonstop. This montage that we'll play for you here now, it's put together by Grabian, the website, and it points out the obvious, that the leftist media is going to go after Trump nonstop on impeachment hearings. Clip one.
Welcome back. You're watching MSNBC. I'm Stephanie Ruhle. The calls are growing for the ouster of President Trump. Another member of Congress wants him impeached. So
is that potentially impeachable if it's an obstruction of justice?
I think we're going to have to look into it a little bit further. We'll...
You were saying that this could lead down the road to impeachment, but we weren't anywhere near that yet. Does this breaking news tonight change your view on that?
True. Are we getting closer and closer to the possibility of yet another impeachment process?
Reluctantly, Wolf, I have to say yes.
So in terms of impeachment, are you taking action, working with Republicans, or doing anything that would actually move that agenda forward?
Do you harbor any hopes that you will find a conservative legal mind to match your desire to proceed with impeachment?
I think he can be looked at and perhaps even charged with obstruction of justice. I think that...
So you mean impeachment proceedings?
I beg your pardon?
You mean impeachment proceedings.
Are you suggesting that President Trump should face impeachment?
No, I'm not suggesting that.
Congressman, what is your case for impeachment?
But now we're talking impeachment. Do you think this is a bridge too far?
Is that the, impeachment is the remedy. I mean, the president can't.
It's the only remedy.
Yeah.
There's growing talk, at least, about impeachment within your party. You have Congresswoman Maxine Waters. You have Congressman Al Green, Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, all talking about impeachment for this president.
You heard Jeffrey Toobin say it would be an obstruction of justice, and potentially, as you know, Senator, that could be impeachable. That could be an impeachable offense.
So it's pretty clear that they're going after him, and they're going to try to bring him down, and then there's not going to be any let up. And as we see this unfold, you just think about where the real scandal is. Think about where the real scandal, that article in the National Review, the latest Just Like Watergate idiocy, that's Andy McCarthy. He says, as we've repeatedly pointed out, and as former Director Comey stated in congressional testimony, the FBI is conducting a counterintelligence investigation. It is not a criminal investigation. The subject of the investigation is not an American, specifically Trump, suspected of committing a crime. The subject of the investigation is Russia. The purpose of the investigation is not to develop a prosecutable offense. The purpose is to gather intelligence of the Putin regime's actions and intentions so that our government can develop countermeasures. I mean, that's the extent of the so-called investigation. It's not a criminal investigation, but the media is making it out to be. And they're using all of these leaks and all of these developments, these new scandals, manufactured scandals, day after day after day, to take one hit after another hit after another hit. There have been a couple of commentators, even on some of the mainstream media channels, NBC, CNN, and so on, that have tried to set the record straight, or at least to point out the hypocrisy, saying that you just look at two headlines from the last couple of years, one from 2014, White House mistakenly identifies CIA chief in Afghanistan. Okay, so Monday night, the big story, the Washington Post revealed this huge story, Greg Miller was his name, the journalist, saying that when they had the meeting the day after Comey was fired, May 10th, the president of the United States revealed this top secret information about some overseas spy operation in the middle of an ISIS stronghold. And we've been compromised now. Now the Russians know where it is. They know the city. And then the New York Times, just today or last night, I think it was, reporting that Israel was the one that gave us that information. I mean, it's the media that's out there exposing all these details. But they want to blame it all on the president of the United States, or at least Donald Trump. Certainly not President Obama. Did the media take that 2014 story and run with it and give it the kind of exposure that they're giving this this Monday night story exposure, or the level of exposure? White House mistakenly identifies the CIA chief in Afghanistan. That, too, was written by Greg Miller in 2014, just like the Monday Night Revelation was written by Greg Miller. But which story did the mainstream media absolutely run with? Another one just from 8-9 months ago. U.S. offers to share Syrian intelligence on terrorists with Russia. U.S. offers to share intelligence with Russia. The Obama administration offers to share intelligence with Russia. That's a headline from 2016. Just last summer, June. But of course, when the major media heard those reports or saw those headlines, they just let out a collective yawn, like Newsbusters brings out. Today, though, it's wall-to-wall coverage. It's yet another reason why he needs to be impeached. He needs to be ousted, as you heard in that montage. And you put it all together, and you see that there is a concerted effort to take down this president. And in that way, there are some similarities, some strong similarities to what happened in the early 1970s. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send some comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Now, how much is wisdom worth? There is knowledge. That's a wonderful thing. But knowledge doesn't necessarily give you wisdom. Wisdom comes from the right use of knowledge and the right reasoning process on knowledge.
That's from Herbert Armstrong's old radio program, a program titled Freedom from Fears and Worries. How much is wisdom worth? I mean, there's knowledge, and true knowledge is a wonderful thing. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free, Jesus said. Knowing the truth is knowledge. But knowledge doesn't necessarily give you wisdom, as Mr. Armstrong noted there. Wisdom comes from the right use of true knowledge. This week, as I mentioned the other day, it's a graduation week for God's College. And so I've been looking into this subject of late, these last few days, just gearing up for our graduation ceremony, which is on Sunday. Tomorrow night, we've got our graduation ball. The students are finishing up their final exams today. There's a lot of knowledge that they're digging into and that they're informing us on paper, how well they retained it, at least in their minds. And knowledge is a wonderful thing, but knowledge alone doesn't necessarily give you wisdom. Look over at 1 Kings chapter 3. You're familiar with this history with Solomon, the wisest king who ever lived. And 1 Kings tells us of this history, the first 11 chapters or so. It's about a united kingdom under the rule, under the reign of Solomon. And early on in the book, the first few chapters, we learn of Solomon's great wisdom and really all of that wealth and splendor that you read about in the remaining chapters of 1 Kings, or at least up through chapter 11, that united kingdom under Solomon. You could say that that kingdom was established on the foundation of godly wisdom The wisdom that God gave to his king. The wisdom that he gave to Solomon. 1 Kings 3, verses 4 and 5. It talks about God appearing unto Solomon. And he asks Solomon, what do you want me to give to you? What if God asked you that question? How would you respond? What would be your request? Verse 6, and Solomon said, you have showed unto your servant David, my father, great mercy, according as he walked before you in truth, in righteousness, in uprightness of heart with you. And you have kept for him this great kindness, it says, that you have given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. Here's Solomon's response. Well, he immediately started talking about his human father and all of the blessings that God had given to him, and the fact that his father walked before God in truth and righteousness and uprightness of heart. His father was obedient. His father mastered repentance. Verse 7 says, and now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of David my father, but I'm a little child. I know not how to go out or to come in. I mean, I really don't know how to do this. I'm not really qualified to be king. I mean, it's not like he was discouraged or depressed. But he didn't think of himself more highly than he should have. He had a humble attitude, at least at this point in his life. He had the kind of attitude that God was looking for. And he became the wisest king who ever lived. Pretty amazing history. Well, and you look back at this humble admission, I don't know how to go out or to come in. And that's what I think helped to convince God that, okay, I'll fulfill this request of his, this desire. Verse 8 says, and your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people. Here the focus is on David, and then the focus is on Israel, this great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. I'm representing a great people. I'm leading a great people. It says in verse 9, give. Here's the request, finally. Give, therefore, your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this, thy so great a people? And the speech pleased God that Solomon had asked this thing. He asked for God to give him an understanding heart, that he'd be able to discern between good and evil, that he'd be able to judge over this great people. He asked God to give him wisdom. That's how it's worded over in 2 Chronicles 1, where some of these same details are brought out. Give me now wisdom and knowledge, 2 Chronicles 1 and verse 10, that I may go out and come in before this people, for who can judge this people that is so great? This was Solomon's request. He understood that it's God who gives wisdom. It's the inspiration of the Almighty that gives understanding. He understood that future kings and current kings, their success is dependent on this growth in wisdom and understanding. Solomon, of course, had to do his part. It's not like God just crammed wisdom into his mind. I mean, he had to use the knowledge that God gave to him. And we'll read later, if we have time, just how, well, to what extent he did do that. Herbert Armstrong, he was talking to God's people many, many years ago and talked about how that This was one quality or characteristic, one trait of character that so many, even among God's people, seem to lack: wisdom and understanding. Let me take you to an example over in the Gospels. This is from Luke chapter 16. A pretty amazing parable here, coming from Jesus Christ. Luke chapter 16, and verse 1 it says, "And he said unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man which had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods." And so here is this steward who is taking care of the financial affairs of the rich man. And the rich man began to question how well he was doing his job. Verse 2 says, "And he called him and said to him, how is it that I hear this of you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you may no longer be steward." I mean, it might be that you aren't my steward anymore if you don't give me a good account here. And then the steward said within himself, "What shall I do? For my Lord takes away from me my stewardship. I cannot dig and to beg. I'm ashamed to do that. I don't have anything else I know how to do. So what am I going to do here?" Well, you can read the next several verses. And what he did is he went to all of the individuals that owed money to his master, the debtors. And he told them, "Look, if you owe him 100, then pay him back 80. Or if you owe 50 measures of wheat, pay back 25. And of course, they were all quite happy to be relieved of part of their debt. But notice what it says, verse 8. "And the Lord commended the unjust steward." This is the rich man who acknowledged that this unjust steward had done something that was pretty shrewd and wise in the ways of this world. "The Lord commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely, for the children of this world," Jesus says, "are in their generation wiser than the children of light." Think about the lesson that Jesus wants us to take away from this parable. As far as worldly wisdom goes, this was a wise course to take. I mean, he was very careful, this steward, to look after his own future. He made a lot of friends because he relieved these debtors of part of their debt. He was creating something to fall back on should he be fired. And the point here that Christ is making is that people in the world often take more careful consideration in preparing for their future in just this life alone than God's people do in really planning and preparing for the affairs of the next life. So many references in the book of Proverbs and elsewhere to going after wisdom like precious, precious stones, better than rubies, it says. It's better than silver and gold. And yet look at how many people, and even in God's church, they don't value this truth, this future, this eternal reward. Godly wisdom, as Mr. Armstrong brought out in that soundbite we played for you, it's the ability to apply God's knowledge to any question or problem or difficulty that might arise, or decision even. It's the ability to use God's knowledge. And of course, to the extent that we do that, other scriptures of course bring out just how much our understanding deepens and grows when we're actually doing God's word. Let's look at the book of Proverbs. This book contains a lot of wisdom. It's a book that our young people should be reading, studying, learning, memorizing in some cases. It's a book really for all of us, young people and adults. Proverbs 1 and verse 20, it says, wisdom cries without. She utters her voice in the streets. And so throughout this book, you have godly wisdom, like it's personified. I mean, she's crying. She's uttering her voice. She's not hiding. She's right there for you to go and acquire. Get to know her. Verse 21, she cries in the chief place of concourse, in the openings of the gates in the city. She utters her words, saying, how long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? And the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. How long are you going to ignore these precious words? These precious words of wisdom that are crying out to us every day. How long are we going to turn a blind eye to God's instructions, to God's counsel, to God's doctrine? So many people are ignoring it today. It wasn't that long ago when people, even in an everyday sense, people that weren't even really affiliated with a church, they understood the importance and the value of studying the Holy Bible. You back up to verse 7 in this first chapter, it says, the fear of the eternal is the beginning of knowledge. That's where it begins. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. This verse is like the theme of the entire book of Proverbs. It's telling us how to acquire godly wisdom. It all begins with the fear of God. That's the beginning of knowledge. Fear God, and then, well, you understand, these are God's teachings. These are God's instructions. This is what I've got to feed on. This is what I've got to be nourished up in, as Paul said to Timothy. Backing up to verse 1, this is the start of the book of Proverbs. It says here, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity. These are the Proverbs of Solomon, the same one we read about in 1 Kings 3, in 2 Chronicles 1. It says in verse 4 here, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. See, if we're willing to be taught, childlike, and if we're going to God for these instructions, our wisdom can grow, our understanding can deepen. Verse 7 again, the fear of God is the beginning of knowledge. A wise man will hear, as it says in verse 5, will hear these instructions, will apply these instructions. Look over at Proverbs chapter 4. This is a wonderful chapter, by the way. There's so many that are incredible, but a real theme of seeking wisdom is brought out here in the first chapter of this, the first half of this chapter. Proverbs 4, verse 1, it says, hear, you children, the instruction of a father, and attend to no understanding, for I give you good doctrine, it says, forsake you not my law. It's good doctrine. Paul uses that same phrase in 1 Timothy 4, 6, where he admonishes Timothy to be nourished up in the words of faith and of good doctrine. God gives to us good doctrine if we'll receive it. God says we can be nourished and strengthened by this good doctrine if we'll consume it, if we consider it to be valuable, if we make it important. It says, for I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He taught me also and said to me, let your heart retain my words and keep my commandments and live. Here again, an attitude that honors the father, that looks to the parents for instruction, that looks to these precious words of instruction. Solomon, as we read, he asked God for wisdom above all else. Notice verse 5, it says, get wisdom get understanding, forget it not, neither decline from the words of my mouth, forsake her not, and she shall preserve you. Look at the benefits here. Love her, it says, and she shall keep you. Verse 7 says, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all you're getting, get understanding. The principal thing. That's talking about the one thing of primary importance in your life. It's wisdom. Wisdom is the principal thing. And God, as we'll see before we conclude, hopefully, God will give us wisdom. Of course, it's a joint project. God supplying us with His Holy Spirit, opening our minds to understand the truth of the Bible. And then for our part, we're digging into the Bible like the Bereans. I've been touching on this on quite a few programs. Acts 17. Nourished up in these good doctrines, as Paul said to Timothy. We have a pretty good example in Herbert Armstrong. You can read through the autobiography and just see how that man had a passion for studying God's Word. He really did crave understanding and wisdom. He explains in this clip I'll play for you here in a second how that wisdom wasn't something that he had. He really did have a craving for knowledge and for understanding, but he had to go to God to ask for that deep understanding and to ask for more wisdom. This is from an old radio broadcast, clip number 4.
Now, when I was a young man, beginning age 16, I began to crave something a little different, just a shade different in meaning. I wanted understanding. And I began to ask God for it. You know, if you ask God for some of these things, if they're right, He'll give them to you. And God has given me a little measure of understanding. I certainly wouldn't begin to say that I have more of that than any man that ever lived, but I've had a little measure of it. Perhaps I've had my share. Well, I'll tell you one thing, you pay a price for it. The more understanding I have, the more I see that we shouldn't put our trust in men, where most people do, and then get away from God, but we should put our trust in God.
That's from an old radio broadcast where he talked about his craving for knowledge and understanding. It started when he was a young boy, a teenager. In this next clip here, he draws a distinction, though, between understanding and wisdom. I mean, the two are certainly related. But he talks about wisdom as being something that he really didn't have, and he had to receive the help from God, the inspiration from God. God had to give him that wisdom. This is clip 3.
But you know, one of the first things I learned when I was first converted back in the spring of 1927, and many of you have been born since that, one of the first things I learned is that I did not have wisdom. I just lacked wisdom. Now, I always craved understanding, and I craved knowledge up to a certain extent. I've known others that I think have craved knowledge more than I have, but I wanted understanding. But I found I didn't have wisdom. That's a little different. Wisdom is the ability to make wise decisions and to use that knowledge and that understanding. They sort of go together, but there is a difference and a distinction. So I did ask God. Now, I haven't always exercised wisdom, but I have on and off, and I have a good deal of the time. And that wisdom, any that I have ever used, has always come from God. I didn't have it naturally at all. It has all come from God.
God gives it to us through His Spirit and through these precious words that we can be nourished by. Like in the book of Proverbs, verse 8, this is still Proverbs 4, exalt her and she shall promote you. She shall bring you to honor. When you do embrace her, she shall give you your head, an ornament. She shall give to your head an ornament of grace, a crown of glory, shall she deliver to you. Hear, O my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of your life shall be many. I mean, promotion, honor, glory, length of days. These are the blessings that come along with a wise and discerning mind. Verse 11 says, I have taught you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in right paths. When you go, your steps shall not be straightened. And when you run, you shall not stumble. Take fast hold of instruction. Let her not go. Keep her, for she is your life. Hold on to these words. Hold on to these instructions. And look at the blessings that will follow in chapter 8 of Proverbs. Here again, wisdom is represented as like a woman or a person crying out. Verse 2, she stands in the top of high places, by the way, in the places of the past. She cries at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming of the doors. And to you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of man. O you simple, understand wisdom. And O you fools, be you of an understanding heart. I mean, you've got to know how much you need to learn. Wisdom's crying out to you. God will open our minds to understand if we'll just look to Him. Basic instruction. I thought it was interesting. I don't think this was yesterday. Maybe it was Monday. This story that came out, you may have seen a few links to it. A real estate mogul in Australia. He was on Australia's version of 60 Minutes. And they were asking him, I suppose, about how he accumulated all of his wealth. And he said, well, it was hard work, and it started with just one down payment and putting money into one piece of property, and then it grew from there. He says, when I was trying to buy my first home, I wasn't buying smashed avocado for $19 and four coffees at $4 each. He says, we're at a point now where the expectations of younger people are very, very high. They want to eat out every night. They want to travel to Europe every year and so on. Well, this guy's gotten a little bit of blowback from a comment that's just basic, sound, practical, wise financial advice. Save your money. If you want property, if you want a house, then save your money so that you'll have money to put down on it. And don't go around wasting it all. Well, so many voices in the media, of course, have rushed to the defense of the poor millennials who need their $4 coffees, who need their $19 pieces of toast. It's crazy. You can't even say something that's just common sense. It should be common sense. Without having the New York Times, well, fact-checking it. Well, I don't know. If you add up the cost of a piece of toast over the course of 20 years, you'll basically end up with not enough to put down a down payment on a house. That's the way it is today. And then, of course, all these millennials on Twitter that are just mocking this man who's explaining in an interview how he was able to accumulate wealth, how he was able to work hard and to save money. There's Proverbs that talk about the wisdom of saving and not borrowing. But you can't say that today. Not in our day when we're so far removed from the wisdom of God. Proverbs 2 and verse 6 says, "For the Lord gives wisdom. Out of His mouth comes knowledge and understanding. God will give it to you if you want it." And we've read through the many blessings and benefits that come from it. God will give you wisdom if you'll look to Him. If you'll go to Him. Let's just conclude quickly over in the book of James. James chapter 1 has something to say here too about wisdom and where to go for it. We have this precious, precious book, the Holy Bible, God's Word, all of this wonderful instruction, an entire book of the Bible that talks about wisdom, and of course an excellent companion book to the book of Proverbs is also written by Solomon, the book of Ecclesiastes. What a study. put them both together. But here in James 1, this is James 1 and verse 4, it says, verse 5, it says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that gives to all men liberally and upbraids not, and it shall be given him. Mr. Armstrong, as I just played for you, he understood that he was lacking in wisdom. And he went to God and he asked for it. He asked for God to guide his studies. He asked for God to open his mind. He asked for God to give him his spirit. He asked God to give him wisdom. The principal thing. Verse 6 says, it continues, but let him ask. So you go to God and ask for wisdom. It follows, let him ask in faith. Nothing wavering. For he that wavers is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. See, our faith can't waver. We have to remain constant, consistent, steadfast. We have to endure. We have to continue our education. It doesn't finish at graduation. It's a continual. It's a daily. That's the way the Bible speaks of it. But just know, as I read from Proverbs 2, that God will give you what you ask for. And putting that together with James 1 here, if you ask in faith. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.